Ekatra Podcast Conversations, for the curious essential knowledge, simplified. Your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we are cracking open a topic that sounds maybe a little academic, auction theory.
Yeah, it sounds like something buried in an economics textbook.
But it actually shapes huge parts of our economy. We're diving into the work of Harry J. Parsh and Timothy P. Hubbard.
And our goal really is to shift how you think about auctions. It's not just antiques or, you know, fast-talking auctioneers.
Yeah, not at all.
These are really sophisticated tools. They determine prices for everything from, say, online ads to government bonds, huge stuff.
Parsh and Hubbard argue that auctions have evolved way beyond simple selling. They're now crucial for figuring out prices, allocating resources, and they tackle big economic problems, like when one side knows more than the other, information asymmetry.
Right under our noses most of the time. And the big question they tackle is, how did the simple idea of selling something get so complex and essential?
Yeah, how did that happen?
Well, the answer seems to be they're really elegant solutions for finding a fair price when nobody has the full picture. They aggregate information.
Okay, so who are Parsh and Hubbard, the experts guiding us here?
Well, Harry J. Parsh, he's a big name in auction theory, obviously, but also econometrics.
Right.
And crucially, she doesn't just stay in the theoretical realm. He gets his hands dirty with real data, like looking at actual government timber auctions to see if the math holds up.
That's important. Theory versus practice.
Exactly. And Timothy P. Hubbard complements that perfectly. His focus is more on applied microeconomics, industrial organization, sort of the practical market side.
So he looks at how the rules actually work out in the wild.
Precisely. Because, you know, the real world is messy. It doesn't always follow the neat theoretical lines.
So together they bridge that gap, right, between the abstract game theory and, well, how Google sells ad space.
That's what makes their work so powerful. They take this dense mathematical stuff and make it feel immediately relevant. You see the mechanics behind the scenes.
It's not just what an auction is, but why it's designed that particular way.
Exactly. The why is key.
Okay, let's look at the books or their works. Core purpose, then. It seems like it's about demystifying these things.
Yeah, showing how widespread they are. We mentioned online ads, government bonds. Think about spectrum allocation, too. The licenses for mobile phone signals.
Billions of dollars decided by auction design.
Absolutely. So the journey in their work kind of builds up. Starts with basics, history, then gets into the game theory foundations.
And then the really specialized formats.
Right. Things like simultaneous multi-round auctions, which you need for those super complex situations like the spectrum licenses.
And the big takeaway, it seems, is that the design isn't accidental. Choosing how to run the auction is a strategic move by the seller.
Totally deliberate. The rules, transparency, how bids work, when it ends, they're all chosen to achieve something specific.
Like maximizing profit.
That's often one goal, yeah. Or maybe ensuring efficiency, getting the item to whoever values it most. Or sometimes it's just about preventing bidders from colluding.
So the rules themselves shape the whole outcome before anyone even bids.
That's the insight. The rules are the engine.
Okay, let's unpack the four big ones. The fundamental auction types, they create really different strategic problems for bidders, don't they?
They really do.
First, the English auction, ascending bids. This is the one we probably all picture.
Mm-hmm. Price goes up, people drop out, last one standing wins.
Strategy seems simple here.
Relatively. You just keep bidding to your maximum private value, what you're willing to pay.
Yeah.
And you end up paying just a tiny bit more than what the second highest bidder was willing to pay.
Okay. Clear, open, then the opposite, the Dutch auction. Descending price.
Yeah. Starts high, clock ticks down. First person to jump in and say mine gets it at that price.
Why use that? Seems stressful.
Speed is often key. Think perishable goods, like flowers or maybe financial instruments. Get it sold fast.
But the strategy.
Yeah.
Wow. Jump in too soon, you overpay. Wait a fraction too long.
And it's gone. Yeah, it's a real timing dilemma. High pressure.
Okay, now the sealed bid ones. Secret bids. First. The first price sealed bid. Highest bid wins, pays their bid.
Right. Everyone submits their bid privately. Highest number takes it home and pays exactly what they wrote down.
But wait, if I bid my absolute maximum value and I win, I make zero profit. That seems bad.
You nailed the problem. That's why the rational strategy here is bid shading.
Meaning bidding less than what you think it's worth.
Exactly. You have to shade your bid downwards to leave room for profit if you win. The tricky part is figuring out how much to shade.
Too little shade, Not enough profit. Too much shade. Someone else wins.
It's a real balancing act. Very strategic.
Which leads to the fourth type, the elegant one. Second price sealed bid, the Vickrey auction.
Ah, yes, Vickrey. Named after the Nobel laureate who formalized it. Highest bid still wins.
But they pay the price of the second highest bid.
Correct. And this little twist is genius. Because it actually incentivizes truth-telling.
How so? Why would I bid my true value?
Well, think about it. What you pay is determined by someone else's bid, not yours. So bidding lower than your true value doesn't reduce your potential payment. It only increases the chance you'll lose the item to someone who bid just slightly higher than your shaded bid, but still below your true value.
Okay, so there's no benefit to misrepresenting your value downwards.
Yeah.
And bidding higher doesn't make sense either, because you might win, but end up paying more than it's worth to you if the second bid is also really high.
Precisely. Your best strategy, your dominant strategy, is simply to bid exactly what it's worth to you. It's quite remarkable.
That difference between first price and second price is huge strategically. Okay, so we have the mechanics. Now let's talk theory. You mentioned understanding value is critical.
Absolutely central. Parsh and Hubbard really emphasize this. There are two main models of value.
Okay.
First is independent private values, or IPV. This means your value for the item is unique to you. It doesn't depend on what anyone else thinks.
Like a piece of art you just love for personal reasons, or a specific collectible.
Exactly. Your sentimentality, your personal use, it's your value. My bidding doesn't change how much you like it.
Got it. And the second model?
That's common value. Here, the item has some true objective underlying value, but nobody knows exactly what it is.
Ah, like bidding on an oil lease. There's a certain amount of oil down there. That's the common value. But everyone just guessing based on their surveys.
Perfect example. Or bidding to acquire another company. There's a true synergistic value, maybe, but it's uncertain. Everyone has estimates.
And this common value situation is where the famous winner's curse comes in, right?
Precisely. It applies specifically to common value auctions.
Explain the curse. It sounds bad to win.
It's paradoxical. Imagine everyone guessing the number of jelly beans in a jar. The average guess might be pretty accurate, but the person who wins the jar by guessing the highest number.
Their guess was probably the furthest above the average, the most optimistic, and maybe the most wrong.
That's the curse. The very fact that you won tells you that out of everyone bidding, your estimate of the uncertain value was the highest. Which means, statistically, you were probably overly optimistic and might have bid too much.
Ouch. So winning is like getting bad news about your own judgment.
In a way, yes. So if you're rational and you know this, you have to anticipate it. You have to shade your bid downwards even more conservatively than in a private value auction.
You have to assume your estimate is likely inflated just because it turned out to be the winning one.
You have to bid as if you know your estimate is probably too high. It forces incredible bidding discipline. Think about major corporate acquisitions, M&A.
Yeah, you hear about companies massively overpaying.
That's often the winner's curse in action. They didn't properly account for the fact that their winning bid likely reflected an overly rosy scenario.
Okay, discipline is key. But then there's this huge theoretical twist, right? The revenue equivalence theorem.
Ah, yes. This is one of the really mind-bending foundational results in auction theory.
It says, what? That all four of those basic auctions we discussed.
English, Dutch, first price sealed, second price sealed.
Under certain ideal conditions, they all produce the exact same average expected revenue for the seller.
That's the theorem. It seems completely counterintuitive, doesn't it?
It really does. One is open, one is secret, one encourages truth, one encourages shading. How can the average outcome be the same?
Well, the ideal conditions are important things, like bidders being risk neutral, having independent private values. But the logic, roughly, is that the strategic adjustments bidders make in each format end up balancing out on average.
So the discount the winner gets in a second price auction, paying the second price,
is on average equivalent to the amount bidders strategically shade their bids down in a first price auction to protect their profit margin.
Wow. The expected revenue washes out.
It's a beautiful piece of theory. But the practical implication is huge.
Which,
if the expected revenue is the same across formats, then the reason a seller chooses one format over another isn't about maximizing average revenue. It must be about other factors.
Like speed.
Mm.
Or maybe one format is easier to run. Or harder for bidders to cheat or collude in.
Exactly. Or maybe one format is better at discovering information, or less prone to psychological effects like bidding fever. The choice becomes about these other strategic dimensions.
Okay, that clarifies why design is so critical. Let's zoom out then to the key themes Parsh and Hubbard highlight. Theme one.
Ubiquity and hidden presence. Auctions are just everywhere, way more than most people realize.
We keep saying online ads, but it's also things like electricity markets, right?
Yeah.
Allocating power generation capacity.
Absolutely. Government procurement contracts, even settling estates sometimes. Understanding this ubiquity gives you a kind of economic literacy. You see the price mechanism at work.
Okay. Theme two.
Strategic behavior and game theory. Auctions are fundamentally games. Your best move depends entirely on what you expect your opponents to do and what you think they think you will do.
It's that layers of thinking thing.
Pure game theory. And that skill, thinking strategically about information and anticipating others.
That applies way beyond auctions, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Like negotiating a salary or buying a house. You're managing information, anticipating the other side.
Precisely. It's a universally applicable mindset.
Or theme three.
Design matters enormously. We touched on this, but it's worth hammering home. The rules aren't just procedural details. They are the market structure.
Setting a reserve price. Deciding who gets to bid, choosing sealed versus open.
All these choices fundamentally alter the playing field, who participates, and ultimately the outcome. It's about engineering the result you want.
So next time you see any kind of allocation system, the question to ask is, what are the designers trying to achieve with these specific rules?
That's the critical lens.
The authors also seem to make some powerful, concise statements, almost like quotes worth remembering.
Yeah, they capture big ideas well. Here's one, paraphrased. Auctions are sophisticated information processing systems that aggregate dispersed knowledge to discover market values.
Okay, so it's about pooling scattered bits of knowledge to find the truth about value, like the jelly bean jar again.
Exactly. No one person knows the answer, but the auction process forces everyone to reveal something about their estimate and aggregates it into a price.
What's another key idea?
This one relates to efficiency. The beauty of a well-designed auction lies in its ability to align individual incentives with socially desirable outcomes.
Meaning people bidding selfishly to try and win.
Can actually lead to the item ending up with the person or company who values it most, which is generally good for overall economic efficiency, self-interest channeled effectively.
And a third one, maybe about psychology.
Right. Modern auction design is as much about understanding human psychology as it is about mathematical optimization.
Ah, the human element. We aren't always perfectly rational robots.
Not even close. People get caught up in the moment. Bidding fever is real. Auction designers have to account for these behavioral quirks. Otherwise, even the most elegant math might fail in practice.
Okay, let's talk real-life impact. The big case study has to be the FCC Spectrum auctions, right?
Oh, absolutely. It's the poster child for applied auction theory success.
The challenge was huge. Allocating radio spectrum licenses, the airwaves for cell phones, TV, radio across the entire U.S. And these licenses were interdependent. The value of one depended on who owned the ones nearby.
A massively complex allocation problem. Old methods like lotteries or administrative hearings were just not up to the task.
So economists stepped in.
They did. Paul Milgram and Robert Wilson, who later won the Nobel for this work, designed the simultaneous ascending auction.
How did that work?
It let companies bid on multiple licenses across the country at the same time in rounds. They could see the current prices on all licenses and adjust their strategies accordingly. If they needed licenses A, B, and C to make their network viable, they could bid on all three simultaneously and drop out if the package became too expensive.
That solved the interdependence problem.
It did. And it raised billions for the government while ensuring these vital resources went to the companies that could use them most effectively to build out our mobile networks. A huge win.
Okay, on a smaller scale, online bidding, like eBay. We mentioned bid sniping.
Yeah, placing your bid in the very last seconds.
Is that just being sneaky or is it rational?
It's often perfectly rational, especially in auctions like eBay's that use a proxy system where the system bids up for you to your max. Sniping does two things.
Okay.
One, it conceals your true willingness to pay from your rivals until the last possible moment, giving them no time to react. Two, it avoids getting drawn into an emotional back and forth bidding war earlier on, which can inflate prices.
So it's about information control and avoiding emotional mistakes. Makes sense.
And a final application, back to the big leagues, mergers and acquisitions.
M&A deals. We said they're often common value auctions.
They are. Companies are bidding based on estimates of a target company's value, often including uncertain future synergies.
So the winner's curse looms large.
Extremely large. Any executive team involved in bidding for another company must have the winner's curse front of mind. It demands disciplined analysis and bidding below your most optimistic valuation to avoid that disastrous overpayment that can cripple a company.
It really forces you to question your own confidence.
It absolutely should.
All right, as we wrap this up, what's the core insight you really want people to take away from Parsh and Hubbard's work on auctions?
For me, it's the realization that markets, especially auctions, aren't just these organic things that happen. They are designed. They are institutions crafted with specific goals in mind.
They're engineered.
Exactly. And understanding that reveals the incredible power of economic thinking, of theory, to actually improve how we allocate scarce resources in the real world, making things more efficient, potentially fairer, and generating value. It connects theory directly to policy and practice.
That's powerful. My final thought for you, the listener, building on this, now that you understand the winner's curse, think about your next big uncertain decision. Maybe buying a house, making an investment, even a complex negotiation.
Mm-hmm.
How does recognizing that winning might contain bad news about your own estimate? How does anticipating that curse change the maximum price you're willing to pay or the terms you'll accept?
It forces a kind of preemptive humility, doesn't it?
It really does. It forces discipline right when the excitement or pressure might make you irrational. A fascinating takeaway from the world of auctions.
A very practical application of the theory.
That's it for this deep dive into the strategic world of auctions with Parsh and Hubbard. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.